Sunday, September 6th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents vocalist, composer, djembe player, and Georgian, Liz Wright. Join us as we discuss Liz Wright's career, her latest release, Freedom and Surrender, and a September 10th CD release party at Highline Ballroom. That's Sunday, September 6th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program, and our guest for this evening is vocalist, composer, and occasional djembe player, Liz Wright. So stay tuned, and we'll be hearing from Hank Williams, our associate producer, and his segment on the bandstand to let you know about upcoming former Sugar guests and where you can see them live at the bottom of this hour. We have a ticket giveaway at the end of the program to see Liz Wright at Highline Ballroom on Thursday, September 10th. So you'll have to stay tuned for that, and maybe you'll be a lucky person and be able to catch Liz Wright at Highline Ballroom on Thursday, September 10th. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl coming up now.
In my bowl.
Staying ready till there's no My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Hi, this is Liz Wright.
Hi, Liz Wright. Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
It's a pleasure, Joyce. A pleasure to be with you.
And congratulations on your new release. By the time people are listening to this, it will be available in many places.
That is awesome. I'm just really excited. It's been a little while.
Yeah, the name of this release is Freedom and Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And Freedom and Surrender, the titles bookend your release. And they're both mm-hmm. written by Toshi Regan.
Yes.
She call my name. Oh, I wonder if she'll call again and I'll answer. Oh, yeah, call again and I'll answer. I don't think we've met before. Heard some old folks talking about you like it was the Lord. Call again and I'll answer. I'm
Yoshi Regan, from what I understand, via Craig Street, one of your producers?
Yes, I met Toshi now. I don't know how many years it's been, maybe. Whew. I think we're easing on 10 years now.
Wow.
And we've been writing together ever since. And she sent me Freedom as a whole piece. And I love that I have something that is, it's all her, you know. And then Surrender, we wrote together. And we just, a lot of what comes to us comes out of conversations when we're not writing. Sometimes she'll just stop when I've said something and write it down. And I'm learning to keep the flow of conversation because this is a lot of poetry and prayer and stuff that's just built into what we find ourselves talking about.
Well, when you said prayer, that definitely comes to mind when I listen to Surrender. It's like, oh my goodness, I want to start speaking to it. It's like, yes, yes.
Stay with me a while. Don't you want to know the why, the why? We've been at this thing for a long time. Baby, where are you going? So far away, you've been on the run. Why don't you rest yourself and stay inside this good company? Surrender.
Surrender, you are mine.
You know, we had a little, me and the guys in L.A. and the Atlanta pianists I brought with me, my friend Kenny, and the producer, we had a little tent revival with the vamp of that. And,
now see.
When we finished, of course, all of it's not captured on the record, but when we finished that song, Larry Klein said, you know, I think that needs to be the end of the record.
Wow. Did you record it in a different order and it was decided that that would be the end, or that was the last song you were singing and that was it?
We picked the songs up in a bit of a random order. We had 16 songs to track and we did it in 6 days and it was all ready to go, but no, we just grabbed them as we thought of them because everything was ready. And Larry would do a quick chart and then, yeah, the guys were just massive readers and it was super fun. I hope I can work very hard and afford the same band again someday.
Mm.
Yeah. It was a true love fest. I told them, I said, guys, I'm going to go get bunches of money from somewhere and I'm going to come back and we're going to do this again. But next time I'm going to do it in our pajamas. Let's just stay in the studio the whole time. Bring your family, bring the kids, you know, bring the dog.
Oh, wow.
We had so much fun that I was just talking crazy like that.
So how did you wind up working with Larry Klein? How was he assigned to you?
I had learned while I was about to make Fellowship that Larry was interested in working with me because he enjoyed the work I had done with Craig Street. So for some reason it didn't work out for the last record because it always has to be a shared decision between A&R and the artist. I was still on Verve Records when I started this project. Larry came back to the runnings and I thought it was great timing. I had been involved in a Joni Mitchell tribute where she had been present.
That's a promise I made to love when it was new, just like Jericho said. Let these walls come tumbling down. I said it like a finally found the way to keep the good feelings alive. I said it like it was something to strive. Prove your self-expression. I need that too. I need your confidence, babe. And the gift of your extra time. In turn, I'll give you mine, sweet daughter. Anyone will tell you how hard it is to make and keep a friend. Maybe they'll short sell you all. Maybe it's you.
And I just felt like he has such a knowing of her, and he's done such a broad range of music. He's worked with incredibly strong artists, just Luciana Sosa. I mean, just really incredible artists and very strong women. So I said, well, you know, this is a really good time, I think. And after we had lunch somewhere along the Ocean Avenue, and I knew that we'd have a good process, and that is what I wanted more than anything, because you never know what'll happen once your record gets out. But if you have a beautiful process that makes you feel like you got to grow and explore and go deeper, then that's something that you can feel good about and that you're remembering while you're campaigning the record. And when you have that light on the inside of a good memory of a good process, like, I think it gives you strength to do the rest of the work.
Ah, nice. There are so many things I want to talk about with regard to this release, Freedom and Surrender. But Riverman, how did that wind up in the repertoire?
Came by on her way, said she had a word to say about things today and fallen leaves. Said she hadn't heard the news, hadn't had the time to choose.
Thank you. afraid today for the sky to blow away or maybe stay. She wasn't sure, but when she thought of summer tells me all he knows about the way his river flows. I don't suppose it's meant for me.
Well, the initial framework for this record, if you want to talk concept, was that we do love songs, or songs that we thought worked as love songs, but they would represent the different positions that we take up along the course of love. What I love about Riverman, Nick Drake's just epic song, and how it fits in this circle, is that it is the only song that works as a narrative, and is very much about freedom. It has a strange kind of childlike wonder to it that really... I don't know if it's a combination of the story within the lyric and also the time signature. It's in
yes.
Five. Five kind of sounds like, it reminds me of a child's gait when they're skipping or walking with a bit of a bounce on purpose.
Okay.
And so there's just this beautiful playfulness to Riverman. It's the first song of Nick Drake's that I heard when I was introduced to his music a long time ago. And I also was really fortunate to see a little documentary about him at a small theater in New York probably 12 or so years ago. And I remember at the end, it might have been the voice of a relative or a producer or someone, saying that Nick really wanted to know that his music was really reaching people and serving them and meant something to them, and that he may have lived here without knowing that, you know?
Wow.
And it has touched so many people and so deeply.
Yes.
He still has an intense cult following, including one Bigfoot person from the South. So it has always been a song about love for me, about love and freedom for me. And it was the only narrative lyric that I had. Everything else was kind of in the first person.
The arrangement of that is really just amazing. I could listen to a longer version of that.
Well, I tell you, his recording and the strings that were done with it, probably the most beautiful string adaptation I've ever heard.
If it tells me all you know about the way his river flows, all night shows that you pray today.
I don't know, it's just slaying the first time I heard it, and his voice was just, I was undone. Yeah, it's hard to even describe. I'm so glad that Larry was up for it. I was like, Larry, I think River Man will work on this, but it's a little bit of a crazy call, but I think it'll work. Can we do it? You know, a record is really a project between the artist and the producer. When you work with someone that you want to share that kind of space with, it's so much fun, you know.
There's somebody that you work with, you've worked with before, Jesse Harris?
Jesse Harris, yes.
How did you wind up working with Jesse, and how is that wound up continuing?
Jesse is a dear friend. I love Jesse Harris. He's just a lovely spirit, and he is a wonderful songwriter. And I also met him through Craig Street, not a long time away from when I met Toshi. I met them on the same record. Yeah, we have all become very close friends. Every time I have a project, I will go and visit with them. They're very, 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 very different writers. Jesse actually works very fast, and he's very, very clear. And he has a beautiful, minimalist kind of aesthetic that's hard to completely describe, but he gets to what he wants to as quickly as possible. He just has a way to do it that is really signature. So he started on something when we had scheduled a writing session, and he's been playing a lot of kind of Brazilian influenced guitar, and so I had no idea what to do with this beautiful thing he started playing. And I don't know, we just jumped in. He really pushes me to work fast, but is very indirect. He's so clear, and he wants each line to have purpose, but he also is very carefree about it. I work my fastest with Jesse.
Well, one thing the three of you worked on, you, Jesse Harris, and Larry Klein, was Lean In. Mm-hmm. And that one, I really have fun with that one. That's just, woo!
You know, Lean In came from Jesse being like a sweet big brother to me. He really let me go crazy. We got finished with the game early and with another song of his that I was going to cover. And so we had more time allotted to write that day. And I was like, man, let's do something with a beat. Let's just go nuts for a minute. He's like, okay. And he turned on a little drum machine with pads on it, and mm-hmm. I was just kind of losing it. He helped me line up the time, but I got to bang on it, and then I was just making up stuff. And I kept seeing people dancing in a club in my mind. I have, from my time living in Brooklyn, really come to realize that there are moments on the dance floor where you reach that point of freedom and exhaustion and openness, and everyone around you has reached it, and it feels exactly the same as a beautiful church service that has reached this kind of stewing point where everybody is just like loose, and it's like, I don't know. It really felt like, I said revival again, but it really mm-hmm. did have that kind of almost like altar call, tent revival feeling. And sometimes you can dance your way into that. I was seeing in the back of my head while I was making complete nonsense with Jesse, and he just kept building it with me. And then there it is. And then I got to go to Brooklyn and actually get people to dance in a little space with me. So when I saw it happening and people were just showing up at, like, you know, in the afternoon, pretending it was night with me in this little brewery in Bed-Stuy. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a little bit of what I saw in my head when I was writing this.
Nice. You know, when I hear that song, I hear several things going on. I don't know if you're familiar with Bob James's Nautilus. There's like a phrase. And there's also a part where it sounds like Nina Simone. She has this song, Assignment Song, and it sounds like that as well in some places in the keys. For today. It's like, wow. This is almost like a sampling without somebody sampling.
Wow. I never heard out of one of those. You got me. Got me stumped completely. Yeah.
And so it made me love Lean In even more.
You know, I was thinking a lot about Marvin, actually, while I was making this song.
And I had read that, and it does sound that way. It's got that, the way the background vocals are, mm-hmm. when you do the ooh, baby, it's all right part. It's like, yeah, that sounds very Marvin Gaye-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought a lot about he and Sam Cooke while I was doing this record. I really adore them both. The sound makes me feel really at home. It's a bonus track, but I actually wrote one song on this record that I wish I could hear Sam Cooke sing.
Ooh.
Called If You Lead Me, but anyway.
Oh. Uh-oh. So we have to get the bonus via, what, iTunes?
Yeah, you know, I got in trouble. I had such a hard time narrowing it down. Both bonus songs I wish I had with me, but I could not change the sequence after Larry made it because I loved it too much. So If You Lead Me, and then I also covered The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face.
Yes, I saw that. And that mm-hmm. just annoyed me so much that it's not on the CD.
I owe you a huge apology because the label asked me, like, are you sure? Didn't you say people are really enjoying this live? I'm like, yeah, but you said I can only have this number, and I've done it, and the sequence is what it is.
Yeah.
I should have at least put it as a hidden track or something. But I'm still in discussion with them for how to give that recording life because it's kind of demanding it, and we have to figure it out.
Okay, good.
These are all great problems, though, I think.
Yes.
But I'm already in trouble. I'm already in lots of trouble.
So you got to play, one of the people that got to play with you is Billy Childs. He played Fender Rhodes on Here and Now.
Oh, I got to work with Billy Childs. You are right. He's wonderful, and he had just completed a Laura Nero tribute record with Larry, just as I was starting with Larry, so it was great to see him. I have always admired him, and I've always wanted to do something with him, and I'm so happy that he was into that song. That was my strange little dark horse Here and Now.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just delighted that he played on it.
With regard to Billy Childs, I think that people don't make enough fuss about him.
You are right on. It's true. He's the man.
Yeah. Now, I hate to even ask something like this, but I will. If you had, if you were told that this is the single you must put out,
oh, wow,
what would it be from this collection?
But if I actually had this choice,
yes,
it would probably be the first time ever I saw your face. In fact, I'm still talking with the label. It may end up becoming a single anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a moment that it's hard to walk away from.
And what would be the B-side? Yeah, I'm talking old school singles, so.
Oh, it would just be If You Leave Me. That would be
oh,
fun.
Okay.
They're actually a fantastic pair. Uh-huh.
Is there anything else you want to share about this? Because there's more I want to talk to you about, but I really want to make sure that all you want to cover with regard to Freedom and Surrender, we've talked about.
Well, I just, you know, I love that this record provided a moment that I almost missed, but I'm so glad I caught, for Gregory Porter and I to finally do something together. We had done a short tour together a year and a half before in Europe, but ever since I heard about him, people were really expressing this kind of fantasy. I mean, the fans and label people that, you know, you guys do something together. I was like, that brother does not need me. He is amazing. I want to stand on the ground and watch him just take off, you know? But I began to understand it better as time went by, and when I asked him to join me on this ballad, the care he took of it, and what it means for someone that busy, that crazy busy, to make the time to do it, it meant a lot to me.
And that's Where You Are. That's the name of that track.
Right, Where You Are. Mm-hmm.
Then I knew you.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar Marble is the name of this program, and what you're listening to right now is Right Where You Are from our featured artist of the evening, Liz Wright, and her latest release, Freedom and Surrender. This is a 2015, as a matter of fact, it was released on September 4th, Concord Records release, and this is a duet between Liz Wright and Gregory Porter. Before that, we heard Here and Now, featuring Billy Childs on keyboards. This is also from Freedom and Surrender. Before that, we heard a snippet from The Assignment Sequence. Yeah, it's not The Assignment Song, it's The Assignment Sequence by Nina Simone. And before that, we heard a snippet of Nautilus by Bob James. And before that, Lean In, which I thought had keyboard essence from those two songs, Nautilus and The Assignment Sequence. Before that, we heard Nick Drake's Riverman from Five Leaves Left. A snippet from that. That's a 1969 Island Records release. Before that, we heard Liz Wright's version of Riverman from Freedom and Surrender. Before that, we heard a unreleased version of Jericho performed by Liz Wright at a Joni Mitchell tribute live in Toronto. And before that, we heard Surrender, written by Toshi Regan, and Freedom, also written by Toshi Regan, from Liz Wright's Freedom and Surrender. And before that, we heard The New Game, Liz Wright, also from Freedom and Surrender, Concord Records, 2015. Before that, we opened with our theme by Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, the very best of Nina Simone, 1967-1972, that's the name of the compilation. This was originally recorded in 1967 on RCA Records. It's a RCA BMG compilation that was released in 1998. Stay tuned for On the Bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams, and more from a conversation with Liz Wright, and more wonderful music on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Yours for the taking, ready and waiting. Let yourself in like you know.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for September 6th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. This week's show features vocalist Liz Wright. You can catch her at the Highline Ballroom on September 10th for an album release party, and we have lots more music for you this week. We start with drummer-percussionist Bobby Sanabria, who's with Quartetto Ache at Jersey City's Newport Tower for a free outdoor show at noon on September 9th. Pianist-keyboardist Mark Carey hosts a Harlem Sessions at the Gin Fizz on September 10th and 17th. Pianist Randy Weston is at New School's Tishman Auditorium for a performance and talk on September 10th. Details for that are at the New School's website. Vocalist Renee Marie is at the Jazz Standard from the 10th to the 13th. Saxophonist Billy Harper is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club with the Cookers from the 10th to 13th. Percussionist Adam Rudolph is at the Jazz Gallery on the 11th and 12th. Saxophonist Lou Donaldson is at the Blue Note from September 15th to 16th. Drummer Billy Cobham is at B.B. King's on the 16th. Legendary bassist Reggie Workman is at Symphony Space on the 18th. Vocalist Carmen Lundy is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from the 18th to the 20th. Bassist Bob Cranshaw is at Small's with Joe Farnsworth's quartet on the 19th. And pianist Harold Mayburn co-leads a quartet with Erica Alexander at Oscar Schindler Performance Arts Center in New Jersey on the 19th. Details are at njai.org. Vocalist Nona Hendrix is at Les Poissons Rouges with Word Rock Sword on the 19th, and low brass specialist on tuba and trombone Joe Daly is at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on the 19th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. And sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. And if you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, September 20th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
I would love to hear the two of you, like, really, you know, you probably did it during the tour, but, you know, unfortunately, I didn't catch that show, but I would love to see the two of you, like, really, you know, go to church on each other.
Oh, it's complete fun. When we were double billing through Europe a couple years ago, we did Someday We'll All Be Free. And that was his idea. He had a great arrangement of it. It was a lot of fun. But it was a love fest. The band really got along great, and it's an easy thing that's there to be revisited again. So I look forward to it.
Oh, that's great. Now, who is E-Bird?
That's me.
And where did that come from, that name?
My name's Elizabeth, and I'm always in the air. That's just me. It's a lazy little sign-off that I use at home, but because I was thanking people that I work with and people in my life, it just came out. I was like, am I going to do this? Like, yeah, I'll just leave it. It's okay.
Now, what is the Bellwood tree? Is it an actual tree?
It is an actual tree. There's a picture of the actual tree, the blossoms at least, on my webpage. And it's a tree that actually saved me from falling into a frozen creek on February 25th. Yeah, I had a black ice accident, and I was just going to be like, you know, c'est la vie.
Wow.
But this tree was growing out of the bank. It was a 75-foot drop. The bank just dropped hard down towards the creek, and my car was getting ready to turn over, and this little tree held it. And because it was a Volvo and they're so dense, the car wasn't crushed, but the tree held it. It held a 4,000-pound Volvo, and
wow.
I waited for help, and this guy named Caleb, who's probably all of 20 years old, a neighbor, pulled me out of my car.
Oh, and Caleb got thanks as well.
Yeah.
Now, is Lewis part of that evening as well?
Lewis is the man on the mountain, and he looks out for everyone. He's like, you know, the bearded man who knows what's going on, and he also showed up, and he dove into my car while it was suspended there, and got my laptop out and my everything, my
wow.
gloves, and he and his mom are my neighbors, and they've been on this mountain, this family, for a very long time, and they just love me. We're people who love the land the same way, and that they never needed me to be or do anything different in order to be that kind to me, and the way they showed up that day just blew my mind. That was a week before I left to record the record.
Wow.
I really wouldn't have gotten it done if those people actually saved my life. I was trying to be dramatic, you know?
Truth is the truth.
Yes.
Wow. That is beautiful. That is excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank
my
you.
Pleasure.
I thank them too. Gosh. Now I'm going to go way back. And everyone tends to bring this up, that your father was a preacher.
Oh, he still is. Oh,
okay. Is he in Georgia still?
Yes.
Now you're in North Carolina, right?
Yes.
What did your mother do since your father was a preacher?
My mother is magic. My mother is magic. My father is a beautiful teacher. He loves to guide and nurture people. He's a tall and strong-boned man, but he's very, very elegant and very graceful in his speech and his movements, everything. Yeah, it's very unusual because he physically has all this power, but he's always been extremely gentle. He's always been a gentle teacher, and he is really into teaching. That's his style. Every time my dad was tempted by other preachers to, kind of do the sportier kind of preaching, because it really wasn't him. And he's just a beautiful teacher who looks like a powerhouse, and he is physically, but he couldn't be sweeter. My mom is just pure magic. I mean, I know that's not really so much a Christian word, but she is. And it's a normal thing that every man of the book has a woman behind him or beside him, whatever the situation is, who is just luminous and who is his support and protection and teacher and friend. And my mother has really been that. And she is just super bright-eyed. It's really hard to describe what she does. I mean, technically, on paper, she was a great mom and on-and-off housewife. She had took different jobs, but my mom is really like the North Star of the family. She's a bright light, and she's complete magic. I mean, she radiates so much light and just joy, and it's genuine. It's always.
Well, I've seen you refer to her as your praying mother.
Yeah. Okay. I went through a difficult time while these songs were new and I was well into pre-production. I was actually almost done writing, and Verve Records not only did a big shift with their staff, But after they'd assured me that I would stay on, they started dropping artists. And I think, you know, they felt so weird about it that they didn't even contact me to let me know. I only knew because one of my trips to go to L.A. to do some more work with Larry was not booked. So I found out the hard way by calling, and someone finally told me. So I had a choice to spend my own money to keep the record on schedule. Larry Klein is always working on, you know, 3 or 4 projects at a time. Mm-hmm. So I had to bridge a gap. And my mother was there that day, and she was there when I really got low. She was there, and she called me every day until I sounded like myself. Yeah, she really closed the gap for me.
Excellent. Oh, it's wonderful to have someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Always with you.
I know a lot of artists do have praying mamas. Mm-hmm. I think they're part of the equation, really. I really do.
It's even better when they're embraced, their prayer, as opposed to, ma.
Oh, no. When you get out in the world and so much is asked of you and you're trying to figure out where you're going to get it from, a praying mother, a praying family,
right.
Really. I have a lot of people who pray for me and just mm-hmm. really... I believe in that. I mean, someone actually takes time out in their life to pray that I find the support that's here for me. And I think that's an extraordinary act of love to focus your attention like that on someone else. Beautiful.
Do you consider yourself a minister, too?
Oh, if you talk to my parents, yes. But, you know, what I allow to happen is ministry, but I don't point at it. I think I care a great deal. You're taught to care a great deal if you come from church. You talk to care a great deal about how you make people feel. In fact, as you know, religious and spiritual music is all about the art of where you take people in feeling and in atmosphere. So I come from that tradition. I return to it for comfort and strength and direction, and so it underlies everything I do. But I think I don't have to point to it. A lot of people can't take the medicine at the labels on it.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't.
Right.
So if it's inherent to who I am, then I can really sing anything that I really feel connected to, and it's going to be there as it needs to be.
Yeah.
from Salt. How did you wind up with this debut, and how did you feel about it once it was put on your doorstep?
I pursued Verve through my first manager. His name was Ron Simlis. He was very passionate, and he believed in me, and I lived in Atlanta. And I also was playing with musicians who lived in Atlanta, and they also played in church on Sundays. So this connection with the sound I grew up in and, you know, the jazz clubs, it was very, very connected. Ron Simlis really believed in me, and he presented my music to Ron Goldstein, who was the president of Verve at the time. And it was really strange how it all happened with my first manager. He believed with everything in him that I would do well. And I had never even seen anybody react to me like that. I was so busy dealing with music like a helper, a hand on a farm. You know, it was just like I was just on deck working. And that's what I had to give. But I'd never seen anyone so excited about what I was doing. And I still went on a journey of artist development and that kind of stuff. And I didn't record for a while, but I have, long story short, been able to make connections in the industry that are very personal and been very lasting.
Yeah, I've looked at your recordings, and when looking at some of the musicians that are on here and, you know, just the songwriters, it is very clear how lasting some of these relationships have been.
Yeah, well, the first pianist I ever played with or even sat in with in Atlanta is on this record, and we've known each other now for 15, 16 years. I played my first sit-in with him, my first sets, my first shows, everything, and he still is a minister of music at Cascade Methodist in Atlanta. And I have to wait until they say he's available because he has a couple of choirs.
Well, all right.
So, yeah, but I begged everybody. I begged, you know, that he ask the church and that Larry Klein just trust me on this one. And we had a ball.
Kenny Banks.
Yeah. And now his son is playing, too. So if you try to YouTube him, you'll either find his son or you'll find Kenny Banks Sr., but he's so into fishing that there are more fishing videos than him playing.
Oh, so wow.
When I was, you know, trying to vouch for him with the label and with the producer, I'm like, no, I promise you you'll be happy. But we can't see anything. I'm like, you just have to trust me, and he loves the fish. I'm sorry. we had such a good time.
You seem to have on to sort of jettison back to Freedom and Surrender. You seem to have like a Wurlitzer and a Hammond B3 on the same recordings.
Yes.
That's some nice stuff.
Yeah, Larry always had two keyboardists with Kenny Banks and Peter Kuzma. And
yes.
Peter plays for a lot of R&B and hip-hop artists. And he's working with Neo now, and he's worked with Jill Scott before. He's a beautiful musician, L.A.-based. And he and Kenny alternated, but there were always two keys going on at the same time. And they worked really well together.
What is a funk box, before I go on to something else?
I think it was a program that Larry used on his iPad. I can't remember. It was either that or some old, really cool studio gear that distorts sound. We used both.
Okay.
And I don't know which one that's referring to.
You play percussion, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of percussion? West African or something else? Or congas? Or what do you play?
Yeah, I studied with River Gregorian. He's Egyptian Armenian, and he lives here in Western North Carolina. And I study primarily on djembe. It's West African style, but it also is a little bit more gentle approach to get the drum to sing and bellow more.
Mm.
So it's really about like how much sound you can get out of it with as little contact. This is what River specializes in. I've studied with him now for 3 years, and I didn't get to play percussion on my record, though I really wanted to.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing to let a singer suddenly start playing something you never see him play, and it's a big budget, and the idea makes people's minds explode.
Oh, darn.
But I have a lot of fun doing it live, and my band, we enjoy it. It's fun. It's mostly djembe. I love the cajon, too.
I've
done some gigs where I play cajon.
Wow.
I really love those drums. I've studied a little bit the rick and other drums, but I just, I play mostly djembe and cajon.
Are you going to play a drum when you come to Highline?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I play almost every live show. Yep.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, unless the drum is just looking crazy, you know. But no, there'll be a good drum in New York, and I play all the time.
Excellent. Yeah. Good. I'm looking forward to that, actually.
Awesome.
But I think it's, what is it, September 10th?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
chains of doubt. Have the courage to be free. Don't cloud your eyes with others' lies. See only what you want to see. Duplicate the simple truth. Have the courage to be free.
Salt, when I first heard Open Your Eyes, You Can Fly, was that like the song that said, okay, Liz Wright is here?
For a lot of people, that's what that was. I can't remember what else. Everyone has a gravity for something, but every now and then I'm reminded by people that that song really meant a lot to them. So, you know, I think sometimes I ought to really add a snippet of that to what I do now. It meant a lot to a lot of people. And for some reason, my friends were all telling me, especially friends in high school, they're like, my kids love that song.
Oh.
How did I ever say to kill them? You never know where songs are going to go and what they'll
right.
do. fly out into the world, and they really belong to the world as soon as they get out. They do. Yeah, I may have to bring that one back into circulation.
Oh, that'd be great.
Hit the ground, babe. It's all right now. Hit the ground, baby. Take your veil down. See your eyes in mine. Leave the rest behind. Hit the ground, baby, 'cause I want to love you now. Hit the ground, baby. It is all right now. Hit the ground, baby. You're gonna make it somehow. Baby, why so long? The day just begun. Hit the ground, baby. Hit the ground and run.
From Dreamin' Wide Awake. I've seen that written as another song that sort of puts you out there to the public.
Yeah, I have to do that one every show. Mm-hmm. And that's my dad's favorite. My
oh.
dad said, girl, why are you playing that? That's an old groove.
Yeah.
You're too young to be writing stuff like that. What's wrong with you? But the funny thing is, if you see me with my parents, they really are so young in heart. And they enjoy each other so much. They really do get along like best friends and kids.
Uh-huh.
And I really do seem like an old lady with them. It's not for lack of me being happy. I'm very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Just really calm. So it's the funniest thing that my dad said, that that's too old for you. You know? But he loves that song.
Well, you know, that's what I thought when I first heard you. I thought you were an old soul.
I've heard that since I
I'm
was
sure.
way tiny. And
yeah.
One of my best friends is 91. And she is rock and roll to me. I love her.
This is magic. This is new beginnings. This is coming to my life. into my life. This is sunshine. This is how we're living. This is come into my life. Come into me. This is a must. This is all I wanted. This is come into my life. Come into me. Take me home. When I first met you, I almost wanted to run away. What is this, my heart? Now I'm standing and I'm so sure for me.
Let's see now, Orchard, is that when you started to work more with Toshi Regan?
That was our second project together, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Who's responsible for the photography on your recordings? Because you're in the outdoors looking at home. I mean, I know it's probably different photographers, but do you have a hand in any of the scenery or where it takes place?
I'm very, very, very visual, and I talk a lot, and I listen a lot, but I talk with the art directors a lot about what's going to happen as far as the visual, because the music is born from some kind of visual impression. So, yeah, we talk a lot. Much of the work that you've seen before Freedom and Surrender, Hollis King is responsible for. He's a beautiful New Yorker.
He's
Trinidadian. He's one of my mentors and friends. And I've discussed pretty much everything I've done with Verve with him and built it with him. He is a beautiful artist himself, and everyone who's come through Verve Records over the past 10, 15 years has probably worked with him at some point or another, and they really treasure him, because when you're working with him, we were dealing with someone at the label, but we always knew that we were talking to an artist. And he still helps artists with their packages for their records. And this time I used a local photographer here in West North Carolina, and I came up with the concept for the shoot. But it's only because I was blessed. One of my mentors was the art director at Verve, so I was used to having that conversation and gathering a team. So I was able to finally, you know, put my big girl britches on, pull a team together and have a concept, and I got it cleared with the label, but also it was in addition to what they'd already done for me. So I paid for it too. I just really wanted to be, I wanted to feel a certain way, and I wanted to look like myself. I have really strong bones, so I look a little bit questionable when I have on too much makeup. If you know what I mean. So, I did a shoot in L.A., and I had eyebrows for days. And
oh.
I was like, I just can't even talk to myself in the mirror with this. I mean, it looks great, but I don't even know what to do with myself. I had to kind of strip it back and do some of it again.
It was so funny when you were talking about your father, and you said him being a big-boned man. I said, I've seen you refer to yourself as being big-boned as well.
Yeah, I am built like my father, mm-hmm. you know. But both my parents have very strong bones, but my father certainly, it's more immediately evident. I enjoy having a real body. I enjoy what I actually look like, as unique as it might be, whatever. I'm grateful for the basics. So, yeah, I just don't want to be in a photo shoot looking lost, because I look suddenly like unworthy of the fabulousness. I can't deal with that. I need to just be myself.
Well, Hollis King, just to go back to him for a second, he is like, he really is magic. Every time I encounter him, I used to see him at different concerts, and he would be just sitting up front, you know, taking pictures. And I didn't know who he is, but every time I saw him, we would engage. I'd smile. I think the biggest smile would come across my face because I'd feel so good seeing him. And then later when I got his name and like, oh, gosh, Hollis King, oh, you are too cool. Yes, he's a rock
Isn't
star
he
to
special?
Me.
He's
yes.
so special. And I could listen to him talk all day, too.
Yeah.
I love his, he still sounds like an island man, you know, and he takes his time and he thinks about the natural order of everything he's dealing with. Like, he refers to something in nature or to the order of how things happen in nature when he analyzes almost anything. The way he thinks is beautiful to me, and the way he articulates himself is beautiful to me. I always felt safe and just understood when I worked with him. It was a real pleasure. Always has been.
Up until Freedom and Surrender, you could see your growth. And by Freedom and Surrender, you can really hear how much your voice has matured and grown and expanded, and that there's still more.
Thank you. And Larry and I really decided to let these other colors come out. It's a tough thing when you make art and it's exposed and people fall in love with a certain part of it. And they continue to ask for that. And you make art for the purpose of exploring your own soul in the first place, which takes forever to get to know, and you still don't know, which is so beautiful. So, of course, you don't really want to get stuck in repeating, you know, but the whole concept of, I guess, capitalism is that you streamline and you find the ideal and the optimum and you repeat it. You repeat your successes and you develop them. And so it was really a strange contradiction going there. And I really wanted to sing more of the colors in my palette. And I said, no, this is a record of love songs. And because of the concept of trying to sing the different positions of love, you know, sometimes we're the phoenix, sometimes we're the martyr, sometimes we're the fool, all of these things, that really helped me to give myself permission to use more color. I enjoyed it so much.
Oh, I'm so glad. It is certainly here that it didn't sound like drudgery.
No. No, I really was happy the entire time.
How did you wind up on Concord? I mean, I know about the change, but how did Concord wind up being the next recording home?
Well, it's great to be thankful and to be friends with people you work with, because people had made calls from Verve and outside of Verve on my behalf to like 4 or 5 different labels. They were all hearing about me before I even knew I was dropped. Like,
oh, wow.
People got picked up phones and wrote letters and just like, you know, they were so serious about me staying in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people out there who thought I shouldn't have been let go of. So it was just really a real show of faith and kindness and goodwill and respect, you know, that people looked out for me and my manager too. Everybody had called a lot of people before they told me I was even dropped. you know, it was a matter of time, and I ended up learning, and it wasn't a long time, but I ended up learning that the guys at Concord, John Burke especially, had an interest in working with me for about 9 years. And
wow.
It was really just kind of hanging out.
Wow.
You know, just kind of waiting it out, you know, and I had no idea.
Wow.
And then also I was really fortunate, too, because some of the people who work with me in my 20s at Verve are now at Concord.
Oh.
And I had great experiences with them. So I was returning to some old friends in a way and making new ones. And so it's the whole thing has been providential and also just, you know, a chain of grace, you know.
Beautiful. That is great. That makes it even better, making the move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fellowship is, and I mentioned Fellowship because you record one of the songs that our last guest was Alexis P. Souter. She's a blues artist. I don't know if you're familiar with her. And she used to sing with a group, Lavender Light, which is an LGBT people of all colors now group. And she recorded Sweeping Through the City, and I noticed on Fellowship, you recorded Sweeping Through the City as well. That is one of my favorite songs. It has always been a favorite ever since I was a child. That is the song I always think that isn't long enough, but there's a lot of work that goes into those few minutes.
And we'll go sweeping through the city, oh my Lord, where my loved ones
have gone
before. And we're gonna
sit down
by the bank of the river. Tell you that
I won't be back.
No more. Hey, blessed are the pure in heart, for they'll go
sweeping through the city.
Hey, blessed are they that mourn, for they'll go
sweeping through the city.
And we'll go sweeping through the city, oh my Lord, where my
loved ones
have gone before. And we're gonna
sit down
by the bank
of the river.
No more. Oh, blessed are the pure in heart, for they'll go
sweeping through the city.
Hey, blessed are they that mourn, for they'll go
sweeping through the city.
And we'll go sweeping through the city, oh my Lord, where my
loved ones
have gone
before.
And we're gonna
sit down
by the bank
of the
river. Tell you that
I won't be back.
Telling you
I won't be back.
I ain't turning around.
I won't be back.
When I go to glory,
I won't be back.
See my Savior.
I won't be back.
I ain't coming back.
I won't be back.
Hey, no more.
No more.
I was really tickled that I got to do that song. I've been singing that with my family. My family actually is the first singing group I've ever been in. We sang together all the time, not just at family gatherings, but we actually sang together at home. For some reason, my father never got enough of preaching and having service, so we had little mini services at home, the five of us, my two siblings and my mom, and it was incredibly boring and drudgery, and that's how I know all those hymns. I go to church now, and I just don't even open the hymn book. As soon as they say it, I just start singing. But yeah, it's a song, Sweeping Through the City. I think my parents taught me the version that Shirley Caesar does. I think that's the one they sing. I actually didn't know that until someone told me. I said, oh my goodness gracious, I didn't even realize it. But we always sang an a cappella and at that speed. And so I was so tickled in New York trying to get these singers to sing it as fast and stay ahead of it. And I'm really talking some nuances of, like, I'm from Georgia and Pentecostal background, and trying to get them to lay the phrases right on top, almost leaning forward. It was so funny. Had a great time, though. I really made that record for my family.
You know, okay.
It was kind of a take it or leave it, like, nobody's going to get this but the people who come from where I come from. And every now and then, you know, as an artist, you take a huge risk and you do something that you're not even thinking about whether you're going to pay off or not. And that was what Fellowship was to me. My family loves that record, and they understand it. It was difficult to campaign it because I suddenly had a team of people who knew nothing about where this came from and who it was for. You know, and it wasn't just my family, but it was for a whole other audience, and it made me really realize how much planning has to go into setting up a record that is such a change in direction. And it wasn't, it was just such a leaning to one side of me. You know, it was really very focused on the spirituality and the gospel thing, you know. I'm glad you love it.
I do. My grandmother, you do one of her favorites on here, God Specializes.
And have you any mountains that you cannot tunnel through? God specializes in things thought impossible, and he will do what no other power but holy power can do.
Walk around the house singing that one.
I got this random message from Russell Malone about that. He was like, girl, you better sing that song, girl. He said, you made me tear up now.
Oh.
You know, it's those are the sounds and the feelings of where I come from. It's really hard to understand, you know, storefront church, very, very low to the ground, you know, very deep communion, you know, between people and between, you know, their God. And it's like, it's so hard to help people understand how rich that soil is. If you don't come from it, it can look only like a religious experience and like some carrying on. But the truth is, like, that's everything.
Right.
You know, that's some piece of the root of everything everybody likes about what I do. But they just don't have a relationship with that. So again, like, it was a real study in people's perceptions and how to deliver things with the right amount of detail. Because people have such interesting associations with certain sounds and phrases and words and, yes, it was very interesting. I'm so glad I made that record, though.
And the fact that you inserted Oya with Angelique Kidjo was kind of very different and very wonderful at the same time. Because
oh, you're so cool to say that.
I really enjoyed that. That's another one I wish was longer.
That was a daring piece for me to put it in the mix on an artistic level. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a daring move, but it was honest because I have a lot of respect for the religions and the ideas that we brought here before, you know, we were slaves. I wanted to keep the line. If I'm going to do a record about the sacred music or something, I'm going to go really go to the marrow of the bone. I'm going to go all the way in there and come all the way back out.
Excellent.
And that's what I did. And I have a relationship with Santeria of tremendous respect and curiosity and reverence. And I see how in a lot of cultures there has been an interesting marriage with Catholicism and Christianity in history. But I felt like I wanted to sing that line and not just let it be some unspoken thing of dynamics that should never mix. You know, oil and water can look like friends if you stir fast enough.
Mm.
You know?
Nice. Now, there's one recording I need to ask you about. It's been written in places as being your first recording, and that's with Joe Sample from the Pecan Tree.
Yeah.
Was that your first?
I thought I did Salt first.
Oh,
someone sent
okay.
me a picture from that session. It was so funny.
Huh.
I used to be really skinny. I wish someone told me I was skinny when I was skinny so I could celebrate. I'm not skinny anymore. It's like, why didn't someone just hand me a pair of pom-poms so I could just jump up and down for myself? I had such a good time. It was Tommy LaPuma's idea for me to work with Joe Sample, and it was a wonderful idea. And I think you're right. Now that I go back, you are right. I did the country, I think, before Salt because Tommy thought that it would just be a good exposure for me, which was brilliant. It was amazing. But also he felt that there was some connection between what Joe did and who he'd work with and just how he would deal with me. And he was right about that, too. I had a great time with Joe. I learned a lot. And he bought me a beautiful blues collection of records when we were in Japan.
Oh, wow.
He was fun. He was an intense man. But it was just really beautiful to me to come out of the gates walking with him for a while and really learning what it meant to have a relationship with music and a relationship with the audience.
Nice.
Those are the two things that you really have a career with. You know, you learn how to take care of your relationship with music and make sure it's honest and that you're really enjoying it. And then you learn how to have a natural relationship with the people. And if you have those two things in good health, you can hang out a long time. And I keep seeing this pattern, so he really made me aware of that. And people just loved him so much. You know, his music chronicles so many of people's personal stories that they just, their level of attachment to his work and to him was just kind of astounding. And he was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, people just loved him. That was really something to see.
I know there's many other things I want to talk to you about, but I'm not going to keep you any longer because it's getting later and you're settling into your evening. But I would like to thank you for spending all this time with Sugar in My Bowl and having this conversation, period.
Yes.
I really appreciate the time you've spent with us.
True pleasure, Joyce. Thank you so much.
And I look forward to seeing you at Highline Ballroom on the 10th.
We will see you soon then.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Bye, Peter.
Maybe when you promised me the world after the life, every time you whispered, I thought you could be my prize. Now I've got to know, 'cause baby, you reap what you sow. Could this be for real now, or am I just a fool? And all that glitters is all.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of the program of which you've been listening. And my name's Joyce Jones, and I just finished a conversation with Liz Wright, our sugar guest for the evening. And as mentioned earlier, Liz Wright will be at Highline Ballroom on Thursday, September 10th. And a lucky person can win a pair of tickets by emailing us at sugar, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, at gmail.com. That's sugar, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, at gmail.com. Try your luck. What you're listening to right now is Joe Sample's Fool's Gold from the Pecan Tree, a Verve 2002 release. And before that, we heard three selections from Liz Wright's Fellowship 2010 Verve Records release. We heard Oya with Angelique Kidjo, God Specializes, and Sweeping Through the City. And before that, we heard This Is from Liz Wright's The Orchard, which was released in 2008 on Verve Records. And before that, we heard Hit the Ground from Dreaming Wide Awake. That's a 2005 Verve Records release. Before that, we heard Open Your Eyes, You Can Fly from Salt. That's Liz Wright's debut release as a leader, 2003 Verve Records release. Before that, we heard also from Salt, the title cut, Salt. And before that, we heard Old Man, Liz Wright's Dreaming While Awake. As mentioned, that is a 2005 Verve Records release. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa coming up next, as we listen to what we can of Fool's Gold. Yes, tonight we end with an ancestor, Joe Sample. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Or am I just a fool? And all that glitters is all.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.